We're here on case 10-731 in the matter of CP, adjudicated delinquent child and serious youthful offender. The appellant is represented by Ms. Burns.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court, counsel. I would like to note that I am joined today by counsel for amicus, Ms. Nadia Siratan from the National Juvenile Defender Center. She will be observing argument today. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. 15-year-old CP was acquainted with abuse long before he was charged as an offender. A child with developmental delays, he was abused physically and sexually from the age of two. This set the backdrop for his offense, his first offense. His second offense occurred after he moved to Ohio to live with his father, whom he had never met, and who did not follow the treatment recommendations from his Utah sex offender treatment providers. This background, coupled with his second offense, may have suggested to some that he was beyond the hope that the rehabilitation in the juvenile court provides. However, the Athens County Juvenile Court found otherwise. When the state attempted to have CP tried as an adult, the juvenile court examined his background, history, and evaluation and determined that he was amenable to treatment and rehabilitation in the juvenile system. However, his classification under Senate Bill 10 says exactly the opposite. He was classified as a public registry qualified juvenile offender registrant, or pork drawer, under revised code section 215286. This lifetime automatic and public registration scheme places a label on him that says that the staples of the juvenile system are not applicable to him, despite the fact that he was kept in the juvenile system and his adult sentence has not and may never be invoked. For this reason, 215286 violates the due process clauses and the equal protection clauses of the U.S. and Ohio constitutions. The state and the attorney general's assertions that the General Assembly looked at circumstances just like CP's and determined that these children were the worst of the worst offenders is disingenuous. CP is a pork chore because the state elected to pursue serious youthful offender charges against him. The moment it decided to do that and the court exercised its discretion and entered that SYO finding, his classification as a pork chore was automatic.
Ms. Burns, if I could stop you for a moment. When you say this statute is unconstitutional, are you challenging it as applied to your client, or are you challenging the statute on its face?
The statute on its face, Your Honor, and in particular, subsection 86 of 2152. So this slim challenge to the pork drawer provision.
So the challenge is that in no situation should it be considered constitutional.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
The reasons for
counsel,
that.
Counsel, what happens if the serious youthful offender reoffends in a way that it triggers the adult portion of the sentence?
Then his adult sentence could be invoked.
And if the adult sentence is invoked, you still say that 215286 is unconstitutional on its face?
Yes, Your Honor, the way it is now. There's no mechanism by which the General Assembly has allowed the pork drawer classification to kind of walk alongside the adult invocation. And perhaps if it did, that might be a different story. But the invocation of the pork drawer classification happens immediately at disposition, very similar to the way in which adults are classified. So there is no kind of waiting period. Perhaps if there were, CP might not have the same claims that he has.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if the juvenile is bound over, however, and treated as an adult, then we would be talking about Adam Walsh or the registration requirements that apply to all adults, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's the idea that they have created this statute for the youthful offenders that is the problem.
Yes, Your Honor. That's the specific problem. compare the pork drawer provisions with adult registration, they are remarkably similar. Like adult registrants, pork drawers are automatically classified as Tier 3 juvenile offender registrants. This means they are significantly different than other juveniles who the majority of the districts in Ohio have found have discretion in making that determination. Second,
they're different than juveniles in the same situation or different from juveniles who are not in the same situation?
Well, Your Honor, both, actually. Under 2152-86, the statute is written so that a child with CP's exact history, save for the difference of his age,
That is a difference, though, right?
It's a difference that, Your Honor, is not rationally related to the legitimate purpose of protecting society from the most heinous or most serious of juvenile offender registrants. If a 13-year-old...
Where would you draw the line? Would it be okay at 14?
Well, Your Honor, the General Assembly has, in fact, drawn a line, but the two most problematic parts of the pork drawer statute, the publication on the electronic sex offender and registration notification database and the automatic community notification, I submit, are not appropriate for juvenile offenders. So those two provisions, I believe, regardless of age or repeat offenses, should not be applied to a juvenile offender.
And one is because it's cruel and unusual. And what would you compare that to in another situation in terms of the cruel and unusual? What does it compare to?
Well, Your Honor, it's a lifetime sanction, which is significantly different than other juvenile dispositions. So while the child may not be imprisoned, the publication of the child's adjudication itself is punitive. The Ninth Circuit in United States versus Juvenile Mail recently struck down Washington's SORNA statutes, in part because the publication of the youth's information was a drastic departure from juvenile jurisprudence and categorically changed these children's adjudications from purely civil to punitive in nature. So the actual publication itself is extremely problematic here in that it's now treating these children as though they are adults, even though they are still within the juvenile system. That is probably the most drastic part of the pork drawer statute, is that it opens up to the public eye things that have historically been kept shielded without these children being transferred heightened system.
If the court believes or the state believes that this juvenile is so dangerous that they require lifetime registration, they could file a motion to bind over and have this youth transferred to the adult system where the SORNA registration requirements would kick in.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, the state attempted to do so in this case, and the juvenile court found CP amenable to juvenile treatment. And that is a significant departure from what other juveniles across the state experience. This youth may never have his adult sentence invoked, and yet his registration looks most similar to adults and is, in fact, only mirrored by adults. The sole difference between CP and an adult registrant right now is that CP does not have to adhere to residency restrictions. No juveniles have to. And CP, after 25 years on the date on which his registration duties commence, he may have the opportunity to have this issue reviewed if he files a petition and follows the requirements under Senate Bill 10. However, that opportunity will not come for him until he is in at least his early 40s or mid-40s, depending on when he is released from the Department of Youth Services.
Counsel, I've forgotten. At what age could the juvenile court have bound over this child? What's the lower limit?
They could have bound him over at 14, Your Honor. So he was a year beyond that. So he was eligible for bind over.
So for 14 on up, if the juvenile court is looking at the record of and the nature of the offenses that are before it and feels, under the scheme that you think would be appropriate, feels that this lifetime tracking is appropriate, the choice is bind over.
Yes, Your Honor, and he.
But that also then subjects. That's a dilemma then for the judge, because a bindover could lead to a very long term of imprisonment instead of a being held at the youth commission for.
Yes, Your Honor.
Shorter period of time.
It would be a significant difference. While a juvenile court, had CP not been an SYO, could have given him a Tier 3 classification at this point, it would not have been on ESORN, and he would have had an opportunity for review at the end of his disposition, so whether that be at the end of his release or at the end of his parole. However, if the court felt a need that CP was the type of child who deserved this heightened level of scrutiny and this public level of scrutiny, it could have bound him over.
Okay. So essentially then for 14 and up, the juvenile judge is going to be looking at this child and saying, look, maybe I don't agree with the law. It's too harsh. It's too long. But I think the community ought to be aware of you, at least for a period of time, until you can demonstrate that you can avoid this behavior in the future. But my choices are bind you over and subject you to the potential long-term prison trial, or stick you with this lifetime reporting. That's where the juvenile judge finds him or herself at this point.
Yes, Your Honor. However,
is that enough to get us to a constitutional violation?
Your Honor, I would submit that the juvenile system itself has sufficient classification allowances that would allow the court to impose, if it felt it was necessary, a lifetime supervision on CP without going to the point of making him a registrant that resembles an adult. He could be a Tier 3 registrant, which again carries a lifetime registration commitment. Courts at this point have the ability for Tier 3 juvenile offender registrants to impose community notification if it thinks it's necessary for a youth. But in no other place has the legislature found a need to publicize the adjudication of a juvenile.
So the only, and if we're looking for support for what you're asking us to do, the Ninth Circuit, is it at this point?
Yes, Your Honor. Given the state of the legislation and Adam Walsh and its implementation, it has not risen to this level in most states yet. To date, there are still only a number of states who've actually enacted or substantially complied with the requirements of Adam Walsh, Ohio being the first actual state to do that. So I think the other challenges may be far behind what this court is hearing today.
Counsel, did I hear you say that the juvenile court could have imposed a lifetime requirement of registration absent the serious youth offender status?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that would have required the same type of registration and notification, or just registration?
It would require the same registration. The notification is what would be different.
Okay, so if someone registers, that registration is public, correct?
Public in a limited sense. It's public in that a member of the public, whether it be someone who knows about the youth's adjudication from living in the neighborhood with them, could go into the sheriff's office for any registrant, juvenile or adult.
Look it up on the internet. The sheriff, you know, has that list on the internet?
The sheriff has it, but the sheriff would have to be the one to access it and then give a handout to the person making the inquiry. However, for a pork drawer, that information is placed on the World Wide Web and is made available, in essence, to the world.
And what's the purpose of that type of a notification?
I believe that the general purpose, at least as it relates to adult offenders, is to give the community warning about the whereabouts.
It's for protection of the public, correct?
Of the offender. Yes, Your Honor. But the publication of a juvenile's adjudication is significantly different than the publication of an adult's registration information.
How is that different to a victim?
Your Honor.
Potential victim, a member of the neighborhood. What does it matter when you're seeking to protect the public, whether the offender is a 15, 16, 17-year-old who has a history of rape as opposed to a 20-year-old who has a history, or a 21-year-old?
Two major differences, Your Honor. The first is that the victims of these offenses have the ability to have victim notification imposed on their particular offender, and that works for adults and juveniles. So CP's particular victims, who were members of his family, would be notified under the statute with or without a pork drawer implementation. So those victims would have notice of his whereabouts. The justification for publicizing the registration information of adults, however, is to protect the community from future harm. Studies have shown, however, that juvenile registrants are more amenable to treatment, are less likely to recidivate into adulthood, are less likely to show signs of being a pedophile like adult offenders may be, and so the justifications for placing them on the web are significantly different from placing adults on the web. In particular, the Department of Justice Smart Office, who tracks and registers sex offenders, has recently released guidelines, its newest guidelines, which now provide for an exemption for states to no longer have to include their children on the web. That exemption also allows those states to exclude children from the community notification provisions of Adam Walsh.
Which is done statutorily, correct?
Well, Your Honor, this was not done through SB 10. This was done through the federal, the Department of Justice. So it's the guidelines of implementation.
It's the guidelines for the implementation, but it would be up to, say, the legislature in Ohio to adopt those guidelines and incorporate legislation that would allow for the deviation from the registration requirements, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So isn't this a legislation issue?
Well, Your Honor, if this court were to find that unconstitutional, 2152-86, then Ohio would not be penalized as far as funding is concerned or any other reason for taking children
off
the web.
It's my understanding that we're not really receiving any funding, that we're worried about being penalized for this.
Not yet, Your Honor. I do not know when those rollouts were supposed to have taken place. For this reason, unless the court has any additional questions, I would request that the court would find 2152-86 unconstitutional. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Heim?
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. CP has raised three constitutional challenges: due process, equal protection, and cruel and unusual punishment.
Counsel, could you move your microphone? Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. And although he offers a number of reasons to debate juvenile offender registration as a matter of policy, he hasn't been able to fit those debates into a constitutional claim. First, CP was classified through a system that more than satisfies the requirements of due process. Not only did he receive a full range of adult procedural protections, but in this case, he also had the benefit of the juvenile court's individualized assessment when it determined whether to make him a serious youthful offender. Second, CP and serious youthful offenders like him are not similarly situated to any other class of juvenile offenders, and so any equal protection challenge fails at that first step.
So, counsel, let me ask the question that was asked to Ms. Burns. If the serious youthful offender adult portion of the sentence is not invoked, is it your contention that the SCORN lifetime registration requirement should apply? Because clearly the state would have a stronger argument about a rational relationship, a rational basis, if the adult portion of the sentence is invoked. But if the adult sentence is never invoked and the child remains in the juvenile system, thereby being determined to be rehabilitated, what is your position about invoking the lifetime registration?
Our position is that it's still appropriate to invoke lifetime registration, and that is in part because with these sex offender cases, it's very difficult to assess whether or not the juvenile has a likelihood of reoffense into adulthood.
Even though other juveniles in the Department of Youth Services under a juvenile system, same offense, would not have the lifetime registration requirement?
Respectfully, Your Honor, some juveniles would. In the traditional juvenile system, the juvenile court has discretion to determine whether or not to give a Tier 3 classification to juvenile offenders.
So why wouldn't the court, as they do with before they invoke the adult sentence, there's a hearing, there's a right to counsel, and the juvenile court judge decides whether the adult sentence should be implemented. Why should that not apply with the lifetime registration?
In one sense, Your Honor, there already is that same kind of individualized assessment that Your Honor is looking for, and that occurs at the dispositional stage when the juvenile court determines whether or not to make CP an SYO. Because of CP's age, he was a discretionary SYO, which meant that after all that process, the juvenile court could look at it and say, you know what, I'm going to make you a traditional juvenile, not an SYO. But in making that consideration, the juvenile court had to consider the history and nature of CP, the fact that he did have a history of offense. It had to consider the nature and circumstances of this offense, that it was a rape of a young child, and it had to consider his likelihood of rehabilitation. And so were this court to say that due process requires an additional individualized assessment regarding his sex offender classification, then it's unclear what that individualized assessment would yield that hasn't already been determined at that dispositional
stage.
Wouldn't
it be his treatment in the institution? That would be the difference, because the registration requirement is put on at disposition. But just like with the transfer to the adult system with the SYO classification, there has to be a subsequent hearing that assesses the juvenile's behavior in the institution. So the additional information for the juvenile court judge would be the juvenile's amenability or successful completion of treatment in the juvenile system before determining lifetime registration is required.
Your Honor, that certainly would be one option that the General Assembly could have considered. But the issue here is whether it amounts to a due process violation to not have that determination at the end of the sentence. And in light of the fact that he could have been bound over into adult court, that he was determined old enough to bear the consequences of his actions, that type of individualized assessment in the General Assembly's determination simply wasn't necessary.
The justification for the dichotomy here, the juvenile system to protect children, the special situation of not disclosing names and so on seems to be changed when we talk about the registration, putting names on the internet. How do we justify that when you talk about the overall reason for the juvenile system to exist?
Of course, Your Honor, and of course, it's absolutely true that traditionally we have chosen to keep juvenile records kept from the public eye, and that's especially the case in the traditional juvenile system. But the SYO is something of a hybrid in that he has the right to an open trial, so we've already made the assessment there that his right to an open trial is preferable to keeping that trial private. And he's determined to be a more serious offender. And so the weighing between a juvenile privilege to have these records kept quiet and the community's right to have knowledge about particularly serious offenders, in this instance, the General Assembly has struck the balance and determined that the community's right to know about these offenders supersedes any privilege to have those records kept private.
Counsel, the system has changed a lot since I worked in it many, many years ago. The SYO, with the facts here that were presented to the juvenile judge, there was an option not to use SYO?
There was, Your Honor. There is a class called discretionary SYOs, and those are 14- and 15-year-old juveniles who don't have a history in this state's juvenile justice system. They can be charged as a discretionary SYO, which again means that at the end of the proceeding, they can, instead of receiving this blended juvenile adult sentence.
So because the other offense was in Utah, this child, if it had been in Ohio, there would have been no discretion.
I believe that's the case. In that case, he may have fallen under the mandatory SYO provision.
So your suggestion here that there was an option is very unique to this case, and we're writing about a challenge to a statute that is going to apply to literally thousands of children.
Of course, Your
Honor.
Who
prior offenses would have occurred in this state. So if you take the fact pattern and the only thing you change is the prior happened in Ohio, no discretion to the juvenile judge. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. But I would suggest that that doesn't pose a due process problem. While the fact that there was an individualized assessment in this case certainly was a benefit to CP, that individualized assessment didn't necessarily occur as a matter of due process. There's nothing either in this court's case law or in the U.S. Supreme Court to say that juveniles have a unique right to have discretion at every stage in the juvenile proceeding. And in fact, if the court were to follow CP's suggestion and say something to the effect that discretion was necessary, it would begin to cast a constitutional shadow over a number of other mandatory proceedings that are already within the juvenile court.
Well, let's explore the science on this. There's been a suggestion that the lifetime reporting or the lifetime disclosure does not match up with the known science on what the curve is likely to be in terms of continuing this kind of activity. What's your take on that? I assume you've looked at it as well. What do the studies show? If you have somebody like this who has raped two small children and he's 15, is he likely to go on doing this the rest of his life? Is he likely to outgrow this by age 30? Is there some science on that?
Well, two responses, Your Honor. The first being on a factual level, that the studies that CP has referenced in their brief refer to juveniles as a class. And so while it is true to say that it's very hard to predict likelihood of recidivism when we look at the entire class of juvenile offenders, traditional, those that are bound over, everyone, in those instances, when you consider all of them, it's difficult to determine a likelihood of reoffense. But there aren't studies to discuss specifically juveniles who have been already found to be repeat offenders of these very serious offenses. So in that sense, I don't know that the studies shed so much light on the type of circumstances that lead to these PERC-JOR classifications.
Do we know if the legislature looked at any studies before they drop the anvil on juveniles in terms of this lifetime reporting or disclosure requirement?
I'm not aware of particular studies that the General Assembly or Congress, for that matter, may have considered. But I would suggest, Your Honor, that really doesn't matter. Studies are give us information about what's good policy and what's bad policy, but they don't necessarily shed light on what's constitutional and what's not. And so the General Assembly has chosen to regulate these very most serious of serious offenders as a class.
Well, I agree. If we weren't talking about juveniles, I don't think this case would have much chance at all. I don't know what its chances are since we are talking about juveniles, but that is different in terms of looking at the constitutional issues, is it not?
Again, Your Honor, it might be different with regard to policy, but I don't think it's different with regard to constitutional analysis. The legislature has chosen to treat juveniles differently, again, as a matter of policy, but there's no constitutional right to be treated like a juvenile. CP, again, could have been bound over and prosecuted as an adult and not have any constitutional problem with that. And so, again, going back to these studies, I don't know how much they inform the analysis the court is asked to do.
Counsel, are these provisions part of the federal requirement that the General Assembly responded to, or are these sort of a creation of the Ohio General Assembly on its own?
They are responding to what the Federal Adam Walsh Act requires. The Federal Adam Walsh Act says that juveniles 14 years of age and older, again, found delinquent of these particularly serious crimes, have to go on the Internet registry. And I think it's important to note that the General Assembly has not gone much further than what the Federal Adam Walsh Act requires. So it's not trying to be unduly
harsh. There's not much further to go.
Right.
That may be the case, Your Honor.
Ms. Burns, weren't there changes in the guidelines recently? Ms. Burns had stated there were changes in the federal guidelines. Are you in agreement with that or not?
My understanding, Your Honor, is that as of December of 2010, those guidelines had been proposed, but they had not yet been enacted. I believe there's still a period for notice and comment. And so
am those,
my understanding is they're proposed because many states are balking at adopting Adam Walsh because of one of those juvenile restrictions.
That is the case, Your Honor. And if the guidelines decide to go ahead and make that discretionary, then it may be the case that the General Assembly decides to revisit this.
Ms. Hines, can I ask you a practical question?
Yes.
So, again, going back to the juvenile who's an SYO in the juvenile facility, but the SYO portion of their sentence is never invoked. They still have a lifetime registration every 90 days for the rest of their life.
Yes.
If they miss that one of those 90-day registrations, is the penalty underlying that the adult sentence then? Because isn't the penalty what the underlying sentence would have been? So this kid who's never been in an adult facility, misses a registration period, are suddenly subject to going to an adult prison now for 10 or more years?
Well, Your Honor, if the delinquent missed a registration deadline when he was still within the SYO system.
No. This is after he's released.
So after
and he's got
released.
A lifetime registration. The SYO is never invoked. He's a juvenile in the system. Judge determined he's been rehabilitated, releases him to the community. He registers, let's say, every 90 days for 3 or 4 years, and for whatever reason misses a registration period. When he is charged with having missed that registration period, he is then sentenced to adult penalties, correct?
If he's still a juvenile, he would still go back into the juvenile court, and so the charge for that would
be... But if he's an adult, because it's a lifetime registration, mm-hmm. he is subject then to incarceration for what would have been the underlying term of imprisonment. Is that correct?
The underlying term of imprisonment for failure to register, not necessarily for his
I thought the
rape
failure
conviction.
To register now relates back to the underlying crime.
I may be mistaken, Your Honor.
So he could face, theoretically, 10 or more years in prison.
Yes, but that's no different than a Tier 3 traditional juvenile offender going on into adult court. That juvenile, too, would have been subject to the juvenile system, never had an adult sentence invoked, failed to register as a traditional juvenile. And then, of course, you're right about this adult sentence. He would get a different form of adult sentence because he didn't have that SYO underlying.
And the registration is not just where the person lives, but it's also where they attend school or potentially work for more than 14 days in a calendar year.
Yes, Your Honor. Those are the requirements.
So we are creating this this obligation on juveniles to potentially last for a lifetime. What about the punitive nature of this?
Well, the state continues to take the position that these are not punitive elements.
Simply civil penalties, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that is our position. But I would suggest that the court doesn't even need to get to the idea of whether these are civil or punitive in this case because there's no retroactivity concern. And so all the court needs to say is that this complies with procedural due process, equal protection, and doesn't amount to the type of punishment that would invoke the cruel and unusual punishment
clause. You mentioned that the General Assembly did not need to have any studies. What about the rational relationship? I mean, we're talking about the constitutional argument here. Don't we at least have to show a rational relationship between what the state is requiring and what, you know, the outcome that supposedly is going to happen?
Yes, Your Honor, and that goes to the equal protection analysis. So in this case, it's a rational relationship of whether we treat 14-year-old SYOs differently than we might have treated a 13-year-old SYO. And as we have suggested, the rational relationship is simply the idea that as a juvenile gets older and progresses through the juvenile system, he becomes less likely to be capable of rehabilitation and requires that continued community supervision into his adulthood.
Counsel, do you recall whether Congress had any findings in its enactment requiring states to enact these at the state level?
Yes, Your Honor, there were findings. One in particular was that the number of forcible rapes that are prosecuted, it's something, I can't remember the precise number, but 30% to 50% of those are from juvenile offenders. And so in reaction to that, Congress determined that these very serious crimes, even when completed by juveniles, require community notification because there is such a high and alarming number of juveniles committing these crimes, and they require that community notification.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Burns, you've used up all of your time, but you may take a minute. Let me inquire Is your objection, I thought I heard your objection to the notification, the public notification of this juvenile. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's not to the registration.
No, Your Honor. The registration in particular, just walking into the sheriff's office and having to verify information is not
That's
the
not part
object.
Of our consideration this morning. It's is the lifetime registration. We're talking about the publicity, the notification, which is your contention, correct?
The publicity and the automatic nature of it,
yes.
Your
okay.
Honor.
I just wanted to make sure that we're not talking about lifetime registration.
No, Your Honor, as to the supplemental guidelines issued by the Department of Justice, the public comment time was concluded in December of 2010, and Attorney General Eric Holder released the guidelines in January of this year. So they've been released. Whether how that works in the implementation, I believe it's reached the point that nothing further needs to be done for the guidelines to actually be implemented. So the requirement of publication is no longer necessary.
But the direction or the mandate that states can adopt these guidelines as part of their legislative structure has yet to be determined, or is that determined?
I believe that's what has been determined, Your Honor.
So it's in the balls in the court of the legislature here in Ohio to adopt the recommendation or the guidelines, if they so choose.
I do not know whether the General Assembly has it on its
No, I'm not saying that it does or it doesn't. I'm saying the next step, once those federal guidelines are published, put out for comment, adopted then by the Department of Justice, they can be fashioned into an amendment to the current statute.
I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
This court, Your Honor, do I still have any time left?
No, you don't.
No. Thank you.